ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 9th chapter, Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. So today we will discuss the text 15. Nahang bibhimma jita teti bhayana kasya Jivbharka netra bhrukutira vasokra drangstrat Antra sraja kshata jek shataja keshara shanku karna Nirhad bhita divhi gav bhi Nirhad bhita digibhad rivhinna kshat Bhinnakhagrat. I'll read it again. Nahang bibhimma jita teti bhayanakasya Jyubharka nitra bhrukutira vasogra dangstrat Antra srajakshataja keshara shankukarnan Nirhad bhita digibhad Arivhinna khagrat. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your furious mouth and tongue. Your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp, pinching teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. Please repeat after me. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your furious mouth and tongue. Your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp pinching teeth. Your garland of intestines. Your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Nrisingadev's fierce appearance was certainly most dangerous for the non-devotees. But for Prahlad Maharaj, such a fearful appearance was not at all disturbing. The lion is very fearsome for other animals, but its cubs are not at all afraid of the lion. The water of the sea is certainly dreadful for all living entities on the land. But within the sea, even the small fish is unafraid. Why? Because a small fish has taken shelter of the big ocean. It is said that although great elephants are taken away by the flooding waters of the river, the small fish swims opposite current. Therefore, although the Lord sometimes assumes a fierce appearance to kill the Dushkritis, the devotees worship Him. Keshava Dhrita Narahari Rupa Jai Jagadisha Hare. The devotee always takes pleasure in worshipping the Lord and glorifying the Lord in any form, either pleasing or fierce. Nahang bibhijyam ajita tej te tibhe bhayanakaksha jyubhar kanitra bhrukutir avaso gradangshat antrasrajak shataja keshara shanku karnan nirhada bhita digibhad arivhinna khagrat. My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue. Your eyes bright like the sun or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp pinching teeth. Your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears, nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. So, Prahlad Maharaj is offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I skipped three verses before and came to this one because since we are just having a special few days here, classes here, so I thought I'll just deal with the important ones from the prayers, and I thought in the sequence this verse is very wonderful. So Prahlad Maharaj, you can see Lord Nrisingadev's form was so furious, so ferocious. At that time, you can well imagine that how furious the Lord must have been at that time, that even Lakshmi Devi was afraid to approach him. They are not ordinary living entities. They are the eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they are afraid. Lord Brahma is afraid to approach him. Even Lakshmi Devi is afraid. Even the demigods are trembling in fear seeing that form of the Lord. So how frightening that form must have been. From that, if we look at it from our own perspective, we can see, I mean, it is so frightening. Like a lion. The face of a lion. And he's roaring so loudly that even the, as it has been described, that the roaring sound is so loud, so fearsome, that even the elephants were running away to distant places hearing that sound. Elephants trumpeting is so loud. Even the elephants are afraid. And his form is so frightening. He has the head of a lion. Can you imagine just approaching the head of a lion-like personality? I mean, the head of a lion. It's the head of a lion. And what was the form of his situation or his form at that time? He is roaring, his teeth are showing. Can you imagine like how frightening it is? Just like that teeth, in that anger, you can't really trust. Maybe if you go near, the possibility of him biting you is there. Then his manes are soaked with blood. And there is the intestine of Hiranyakashipu is wrapped around his neck. His eyes are red and fiery. So this is how frightening that form of the Lord is. But Prahlad Maharaj is not afraid at all. Prahlad Maharaj is saying that I am not afraid. Why Prabhupada is explaining, why Prahlad Maharaj is not afraid of that form? Previously he actually mentioned that, who am I, the son of a demon? A very low birth. My habits are very, very dirty. I am dirty by nature, I am dirty by my birth and surroundings and activities. Like, can you imagine, around him everyone is a meat eater. Everyone is eating meat. They're all meat eater. Not only meat eater, they relish the human flesh. These Rakshasas and Asuras and Daitas, you know. They relish, Rakshasas relish human flesh. For them, this is the most delicious food. And that is, he is sincerely making his appeal to the Lord, or he is sincerely making his presentation to the Lord. That it's not that we should not think that these are just some stories or fairy tales. Sometimes we fail to understand how it is. Sometimes we fail to understand because we have. It's something like, you already know the story. When you know the story, is there any interest left? Like when you go to see a drama or a movie, that you have already read the story before. Half the charm is actually gone. Or you see the movie second time, how do you feel? You feel, I know everything. So that is often the case with the Lord's pastimes. Because we know everything. But if you do not know, then what happens? Prahlad Maharaj, how would he feel? Just consider, the Lord is there, he just killed Hiranyakashipu. What is the guarantee that he is not going to kill you next? But because we know the story already, we know that, nothing will happen. We know what will happen. He'll place his hand over Prahlad's head, and then Prahlad will start to offer his prayers and so forth. But still, we relish reading the scriptures. Time and time again we read and we get a different understanding. This understanding is not out of excitement. This understanding is of spiritual realization. This understanding is of revelation. Newer and newer revelations come. Newer and newer spiritual realizations come. Like when we think about this situation, Prabhupada is giving the example. What is Prahlad Maharaj's situation at that time? Like, not only Prahlad Maharaj is afraid, why Prahlad Maharaj is not afraid? Prahlad Maharaj is not afraid because he has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when one takes shelter of Supreme Personality of Godhead, what's his attitude? If you want to kill me, kill me. That is the attitude of a devotee. Not that he will always protect me. Not that he will always pamper me. No. The devotee's attitude is, if you want to kill me, you kill me. I am prepared for that. That's why Prahlad Maharaj is not afraid. But although a devotee approaches the Lord in that way, then does the Lord act with him in an unfavorable way? Never. Lord always gives protection. Always gives protection to his devotee. Even if a devotee is killed, still he is protected. Like, we should not think that, we will always be protected. That means nothing will happen to us. No, devotees sometimes get killed also. It is not that we should think that because we have become devotees, now nothing wrong will happen to us, or will not die, or no dangerous situation will affect us. The dangerous situation may affect us, but our attitude should be, we are not worried, because we know we have surrendered to the Lord, and the Lord will give me protection under all circumstances. Even if we have to die, still the Lord will give us protection. A wonderful example that a devotee may not be protected by the Lord all the time. A wonderful example of that is Jatayu. You all know the anecdote of Jatayu? Jatayu is a bird. He is the son of Arun. Who is Arun? Arun is the elder brother of Garuda. Garuda's elder brother is Arun. Arun is the chariot driver of Suryadev, sun god. He drives the chariot of sun. And Arun was married to Sheni, and Sheni's daughter, Sheni had two sons, Jatayu and Sampati. Now, Jatayu is a bird, and he was a friend of Dasarath. So when Ram went to the forest, he met Jatayu, a huge bird, and a huge eagle. But he was old, but extremely powerful. So Jatayu told Ram that when you and Lakshman are not here, I will protect Sita. So when Ravan came to steal Sita, Jatayu fought with Ravan. Jatayu actually gave a very difficult time to Ravan. Ravan was so powerful that even Jamraj was apparently defeated by him. What to speak of other demigods? Indra, Chandra, Varun, everyone was defeated by him. Ravan was so powerful. But Jatayu fought with Ravan. Jatayu broke his chariot, Pushpak Viman. He broke his bow, just fighting with him with his claw and fangs, claw and beak and wings. He broke his chariot, he killed that chariot was driven by the donkeys, the Pushpak Viman of Ravana. So donkeys were killed, his chariot driver was killed, and he broke the chariot, and Ravan was without the chariot now. And so he then fought with Jatayu and cut his wings. And Jatayu fell, dying. So, Ram, now we can see he died. Now one can say, how can a devotee defending the Supreme Personality of Godhead died? Then how can, how will people have faith in the Lord? The thing is that devotee may die. But then what happens? When one dies for the sake of the Lord, then the Lord gives him the protection. Not of the body. He may not protect our body, but he'll protect our soul. Jatayu reached the ultimate perfection of his life by giving his life for the Lord. Similarly, the monkeys were fighting for Lord Ramchandra. Many of them died during that battle. But then what happened? At the end, they all were revived by the Lord. They all came back to life. Life where? In the spiritual sky. You lose your life for the sake of the Lord here, and you get your spiritual life. Your life in the spiritual sky. Now, does it justify becoming suicide bombers? No. That is not. The thing is, we have to be engaged in the service of the Lord and then leave it up to the Lord whatever He wants. Not that, suicide is the worst thing for anyone to commit. To kill oneself. Such a wonderful opportunity has been given by Mother Nature to serve the Lord. This body and this advanced intelligence must be used in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the ultimate perfection of our existence. But instead of that, just recklessly, carelessly, if we destroy this life, then the Mother Nature will not give us another body. It's something like Mother Nature gave us a very wonderful gift. Very precious gift He gave us. What does she expect? That we should utilize the gift properly. When somebody gives you a precious gift, and if he sees that you are not utilizing it, you are misusing it, then do you think He'll give you another precious gift to you? He will say, you don't know the value, so why should I give it to you? So similarly, Mother Nature has given us a very wonderful human form. And this human form with advanced intelligence, advanced consciousness must be engaged in the service of the Lord. Anyway, to go back to the point, Prabhupada is pointing out that what is Prahlad Maharaj's situation as a devotee? He is not afraid because he knows that he has taken shelter of the Lord and the Lord will take care of him. Apparently whatever happens, that's different. But since he has taken shelter of the Lord will give him protection, Lord will give him the ultimate benefit. And as I was mentioning the other day, that when Bibhishan came, there was a confusion whether he should be given shelter or not. Then Lord Ramchandra finally told them, after hearing all the opinions of others, Ramchandra said that even if somebody comes with an evil intention and surrenders unto me, I accept him. Even if one just once takes shelter of me, just once, then I give him protection not throughout this life, even beyond this life. So this is how wonderful the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. Now, even if we unfavorably approach him with pretension of surrender to cause harm to him, even if we pretend to surrender with an evil intention, still the Lord accepts us. So that is how merciful He is. So when one surrenders unto the Lord, there is no way the Lord can go against us. That is the wonderful situation. That is the wonderful aspect of devotional service to the Lord. And here Prabhupada is giving a few examples. Two examples specially. One is the lion's teeth are so frightening. Can you ever imagine that going near a lion when... Can anybody approach a lion? No. Because his teeth are so sharp, like all, and the mouth is so big and so powerful. Just one bite and your head will be severed from your body. But with the same teeth, the lion is holding on to the cub, lion's cub. Where the lion is holding the cub? At the most vulnerable point, the back of your neck. The lion and tigers, and even mouse, even cats, they bite onto their prey, you know where? Just at the back of the neck. They bite their prey at the back of their neck and they give a jerk. And it breaks your spine. And that's how they kill you. So, now the cub, the lion is holding the cub to safety, taking the cub to safety. Where the lion holds the cub to? Right there. The most vulnerable point, the back of his neck. But is the lion's cub afraid? No. He knows that he is his father or his mother. And he is actually not hurting him or harming him. The purpose of biting him on the back of his neck is simply to take him to place of safety. So that is the attitude of a devotee. Even if the Lord is biting you at the back of your neck, is simply to take you to the safety. Just as a cub is not afraid of the lion, a devotee is not afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Because he has taken shelter of Him. He has taken shelter of Him as his father. So how can the father harm his child? He is the Supreme Father, we all are His children, and we have taken shelter of Him. So what He'll do? We have complete confidence that He will take care of us. Even though apparently He may show His teeth and bite onto our back of our neck, it is to take us to a place of safety. And the other example Prabhupada is giving is that a small fish in a turbulent ocean. The ocean is so turbulent that people, can you imagine getting into the middle of the ocean, falling into the water in the ocean? No matter how powerful you are, do you have any chance? No. This ocean water can even sweep away an elephant. Right? But a small little fish, it's playing in the ocean. It's not afraid of the ocean. Big waves, it's just jumping in that big wave. Like playing in there. Why? Because a small fish, has taken shelter of the ocean. It belongs to the ocean. Because it belongs to the ocean, therefore it's not afraid of the ocean. So similarly, if we belong to the Lord, then there is nothing to be afraid of, no matter how dangerous He may appear to be. His forms sometimes are pleasing, sometimes it can be very dangerous. But even then, a devotee is not afraid, because he knows that He is all auspicious, Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is our loving Father. He is our dearmost friend. Why should one be afraid of his friend? Why should one be afraid of his father when he is surrendered unto him? And that is the life of a devotee. That is the attitude of a devotee. A devotee is never afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No matter in whatever dangerous form he may appear to him. Even if he comes as death, sometimes he comes as death. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has many various forms. One of the forms of the Lord is death. So if he comes as death, how should we see him? There also you know, oh, now he has come to me as in the form of death. So wonderful. My dear Lord, you are so merciful that finally you appeared to me. All this while I was waiting for you. Now you have come to me. Even if you have come to me in the form of death, I'm not afraid of you. Rather, I'd been waiting for this moment. I'd been waiting when you would come to me. And now finally at the end of my life, you have come to me. And in this way, if we can see the Lord as death, then, and if we are not afraid of Him, then where is the question of being afraid of Him in any situation or in any form? It is just a devotional service means trying to see the Lord everywhere. In whichever way He comes to us, to recognize Him. That it is Him who has come. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari. Does anybody have any question? Yes. Yeah, a devotee sees, you know, even though the situation may appear to be dangerous, but it is appearance of the merciful Lord. It is the Lord who has come. Like if we can see Him as death, then what form can be more, can be frightening than Him? Than that, right? Like if you want me to die, I will die, right? So shouldn't a devotee feel that way? Isn't that all the, like Prahlad Maharaj has been in so many dangerous situations, but how did he feel about those situations? That this must be your arrangement, because nothing happens without your approval. So if I am in this situation, then there must be a reason why you put me in this situation. My father is trying to kill me. He is throwing me from top of a mountain. Like, if I die, I'll accept it as your wish. The venomous snakes are there, they're biting me. If that is what you want, let it be. So, a devotee's attitude is that he accepts everything as the divine arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the expression of His mercy. Expression of His mercy. Like whatever situation I may be in, it is, it must be your arrangement, and because I have taken shelter of you, you know what is good for me. See, taking shelter doesn't necessarily mean getting protection all the time. Taking shelter means to have that full confidence that whatever you do is for my benefit. I have taken shelter of you. Therefore, you know what is good for me. I may not know what's good for me, but you know what's good for me because you are the supreme, all-cognizant personality of Godhead. Therefore, you do whatever you want to do with me. And by doing that, by developing this attitude, we become fearless. No more fear, because I have taken shelter of you. Yes.
Sometimes when we are doing some service and there are some obstacles, so at that time should we see that as Krishna doesn't, that maybe this is Krishna's plan and this shouldn't happen, or should we feel that Maya is suffering so we should try even harder?
Yeah. You see, a devotee doesn't give up when there is obstacle. Rather, devotee tries his best. If it is service to the Lord, he doesn't think that, oh, if there is some obstacle, let me give up the service. No, if it is a matter of serving the Lord, he tries his best. And if there is an obstacle, he sees not that maybe the Lord doesn't want me to do it, but he sees that maybe he's testing me. Testing my sincerity, testing me, or he is putting me through this difficulty because he is making me more experienced and more competent. By putting me through these difficulties, he is actually increasing my ability to render service to him. Now just consider, just a common sense consideration. So you have a servant, and the servant, you ask the servant to go to the market to buy something. and he goes to the market and that thing is not available. Comes back to you and says, well, I couldn't get that, so I came back. Now, that is one attitude. But if the servant is sincere to serve you, then what he'll do? He will consider, you want that. Okay, it's not available in this market. Let me go to the next market. It's not available in that market. Let me go to the next market. And he won't stop until he finds it and then he comes back to you. Isn't that a common sense? And when he comes back with the thing, then you are pleased. Oh, you had undergone so much trouble. Actually, there was no need. You could have come back. There was no need. That's what you tell him. But he will not stop until he gets the thing that he is meant for yourself, meant to serve for yourself. Now that is the thing with the Supreme, in case of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't give up when there is an obstacle, but push on. Because your business is to please Him through that service. Is there any question in the... Okay. Any other question? Yes.
I'm not sure that I'm if I have understood correctly, but did you say that Jatayu was afraid of Dasarath? That's why he was living in the... No, actually.
Not afraid. He fought with him. And he gave up his life.
Dasarath.
Friend.
Friend. Okay.
He was a friend of Dasarath. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Really important to really, you know, taking the time to really make our life visualize and to have time, because it seems that so often we can like read the scriptures of the past tense, but it's like on one dimension and we don't really allow ourselves, or, you know, to really open up into the different levels. So I was thinking that the way you were explaining what missing days look like, it really helped me to kind of enter more into the past time. So how can we actually, again, we're practicing our Krishna consciousness, or reading the scriptures, entering the mood for Krishna, how can we really develop this, you know, really trying to go deep into things, not to be surface in our devotional service?
Okay, I'll just, you know, I'll see if I understood the question properly. You're saying while rendering devotional service, you are finding that there are two aspects. Mm-hmm. One is the superficial aspect of devotional service and other is the genuine aspect of devotional service, which impels you to go deeper into it. Naturally, we should go for the deeper aspect, not just the superficial aspect. Because, you know, superficial means only on the surface. But we have to go deep into it. And then only our devotion will become mature. Otherwise, if you're just caught up with some external, you know, some external display of service, but internally we are not really relishing it, then that will not really inspire us in the path of devotional service for very long. Like, we have to get the taste. Then only our devotional service will become founded on a sound, solid ground. And from that point, there is no wavering. We will not deviate from that point. We have to become fixed up. Kanishtha Adhikar, Madhyama Adhikar, Uttama Adhikar. The Kanishtha Adhikar is caught up with those, you know, just those superficial aspect of devotional service. But Madhyama Adhikar platform is when he is well founded in his devotion. And therefore it is said that a Kanishtha Adhikari may give up. But a Madhumadikari will never give up devotional service because his devotion has been founded on a solid ground. And Uttamadhikar, of course, you know, there is no question of. So we have to come to the point of devotional Madhumadhikar platform and, you know, at least understand the purpose of our devotion and the objective of our devotion, devotional service. Does it answer your question? Yeah. Thank you. Any other question? You have a question?
I just want to try to ask you for everybody. So I'll ask you.
You don't want to ask in front of everybody. But in Krishna consciousness there is no secret. Ask. It's for everybody's benefit. Very good that you asked that question. It's good that you asked the question. That's what I said, like, you know, questions and answers actually benefits everybody. Now tell me, what is devotional service? Is devotional service is just service or get the result?
Service.
When you serve, do you want the result or do you want to serve?
I want to serve, but how I can serve, sometimes I ask myself if those books does not reach the heart of the ordinary audience, because actually my books are for non-devotees, so they are attracted to devotees. Mother started with my first novel when she was in my home, because they are always translated into English. And you know, my husband and my sister, that are sometimes teasing me, oh, you got Nobel Award in your previous lifetime because I did regression twice, and I know I saw 4 or 5 lifetimes. Why do you like to get again in this lifetime? You know, I just feel like...
Yeah, again, I'll go back to the point, like, what is actually important? In devotional service, is the service the important or the result is the important? Now, say for example, when Vyasadeva was writing the Vedas 5,000 years ago, was he thinking that when these books are going to be published? Or he wrote for the benefit of people? Maybe not now, maybe 5,000 years from now, some people will read it and derive the benefit. So devotional service would mean... You just write for the benefit of people. Don't worry when people will read it. If you are so convinced that they will benefit, then someday Krishna will make the arrangement. So just keep on writing. Don't worry about when they will be published or when. On the other hand, if you are thinking that when they will be published, then you are actually fanning your false ego. You are fanning your false ego. When I'll get the recognition? When everybody will think that I am such a big personality? When they will give me the Nobel Prize. That is fanning your false ego. Don't fan your false ego, try to inflate your false ego. Rather, try to deflate your false ego, get rid of your false ego. Meaning, I am nobody, I am totally unqualified. But still I am trying to write something. Although I am not qualified, still this is the way I want to serve Krishna. I am trying to. And another thing I will tell you, that start the devotional service in a menial way, in a very simple way. I will suggest, rather come to the temple and wash the pots. That will be a more effective devotional service, which will satisfy your heart. Then, just writing, sitting in the corner of your room, writing the books and thinking that when they'll be published. Right? You see, I'm actually dealing with the false ego aspect. I am a big writer.
I do all the dirty things at home. I'm the garbage lady.
But do it in the temple for Krishna.
Okay.
When you're doing it at home, you're doing it for yourself.
Okay.
Right? When you come and do it in the temple, you're doing it for Krishna, you're doing it for the devotees.
Okay. So I should do these kind of things more often in the temple?
Yeah. Because that will make you at least more content in your heart. Now, what is happening, you are becoming discontent in your heart. You are not feeling happy in your heart. Now, what is more important? Your happiness, internal happiness, or external recognition? Right. There's so many people, just a moment, so many people got so much recognition, but they are unhappy in heart. Whereas somebody who did not get any recognition, but he is content in his heart. Yes, what?
Is it possible that a devotee has a pure motivation to preach in a particular way, doesn't desire anything, actually wants to see conditioned souls come to Krishna, get Krishna's mercy, get out of suffering, go back home, back to Godhead? Is it possible that in such a case Krishna still doesn't give the results in spite of the devotee's...
Okay, I'll say, on the devotee's part, he never gives up. He continues. And when Krishna sees that the devotee is sincere, he will reward him. Look at Prabhupada's life. For 44 years, he struggled without any success. Did he give up? Or did he complain? No. He knew that, well, if my intention to serve Krishna is sincere, Krishna will. Krishna will. And whether Krishna recognizes my service or not doesn't matter. My business is to serve him. That is the attitude of a devotee. And as I said, Prabhupada's life is the most wonderful example for that. Can you imagine, trying to do something at the age of 26, right? And until 66, it was one failure after another, one failure after another, one disappointment after another, one humiliation after another. But what did Prabhupada do? Did he give up? He just continued. Even when he is coming to America, now finally his dream is becoming true. He has come to the West to fulfill the desire of his spiritual master. And he is writing that I'm so unqualified. What am I going to do? These people are completely obsessed in the mode of passion and ignorance. Will they ever listen to the words of Vasudev? Will they ever respond to my call for devotional service? Even the day he arrived in America, landed in Boston, that day he wrote that. So that is a devotee. He tries with maintaining a very humble attitude. I am unqualified. But my spiritual master told me to do it, that's why I am doing it. Although I am totally unqualified. But then what we find? We find him as the most qualified person, the most successful person. So much so that his glory will be enhancing with the passing of time and continue to be sung in this world for 10,000 years to come. And not only 10,000 years, thousands of years to come. Like, is Hanuman's glory sung for only 5,000 or 10,000? No, hundreds of thousands, millions of years. Hanuman's glory is still being sung. Pandava's glories are still being sung. That is the glory of a devotee. It's eternally sung. And what to speak of Srila Prabhupada's glory? It will be eternally sung in three worlds.
Is it possible though that Krishna, who's completely independent, or one individual arisen,
then ask the other devotees, is this the service I should do? Don't whimsically decide, this is the service I am going to render. Ask other devotees. Ask your senior devotees. Is this what I should do? And see, take their opinion. And accept their words as Krishna's word. Because Krishna speaks through his devotees.
Could Krishna ever engage someone, in other words, not a whimsical service, but a service that Krishna himself wants someone to render, and yet for some inconceivable reason,
a devotee's service never goes in vain. A sincere devotee's service will never go in vain. But a whimsical neophyte service may go in vain. Because he is deciding it whimsically. Now again, we go back to the thing. Did Prabhupada decide for himself? No, his spiritual master told him at the very first meeting, do it. And he took it up as his life's mission. Why? Do you have any specific agenda?
My motivation is not pure, but I know that I tried in the music world, preaching in there didn't work. And there's other examples of devotees, your contemporaries, who may have tried and they have been even told by Prabhupada to do something specific, but the result didn't come.
Okay, you know, you played the role of Shyamsundar, you know what he did. He didn't want to become a musician, but he turned George Harrison into a devotee. So instead of you becoming, probably that is why it's not being successful, because there is some desire for name and fame. You want to become not recognized as a devotee, but as a big musician. And probably that's why Krishna is not fulfilling that desire.
Is that the case with that name?
I'm just saying, maybe.
Well, that's for sure.
Like, on the other hand, I will say, then why don't you just go to Michael Jackson and preach to him and make him into a devotee? And let him sing for Krishna.
What about contemporaries of Yuga Maharshi who are pure devotees?
Okay.
And who don't get the result?
Like who?
I don't know.
A contemporary devotee who is a?
Like a disciple of Prabhupada. Or,
and what?
Tries to set up a project and it fails, or who tries a particular...
Then often, you know, you will see behind that their actual intention was not to serve Krishna through the project. The actual intention was something else. I'll give an example. Like Shyamsundar Prabhu wanted to do a jewelry business. And his thing was that he will make a lot of money and that money will be used in Krishna's service. Prabhupada discouraged him. Why? Because Prabhupada saw that his main intention was not to make money for Krishna. His main intention was his attachment for jewels. And he wanted to do that and make money not probably for exclusively for Krishna's service. And that's why not only he lost his business, I mean for many years he was out of Krishna consciousness. So we have to be careful, service just doesn't mean that you have to become a big musician and serve. When you are going out distributing books, that service probably is much more tangible and much more valuable than that. You have recognized fame as a big book distributor, so why aren't you satisfied with that? Everybody recognizes that. I'm talking pure devotional service. Yes.
How do we cultivate sincerity in devotional service? many times, like, we do things that we know we should be doing, but we don't, like, internally, we're not sincere, we're not at the level that pure devotee should be. So how do we
that, you know, look at the definition of pure devotional service, anna bhilashita shunyam. No other desire but to please Krishna. That's the only intention. No other desire. Even free from what to speak of material enjoyment, even devoid of the desire of liberation. Like mixed devotion means what? Rendering devotional service, but there is some ulterior motive of sense gratification. That is karmad. And gyanad means desire for liberation. So it is gyana karmad anabritam. Anukullena krishnanushilanam. Whatever is favorable to Krishna consciousness, that I do. I'm doing my PhD dissertation, but if there is a need to go to the kitchen and cook for Krishna, I'm prepared to do that. Right? So, anukullena Krishna anushilan, whatever is favorable, right, doing that. So whatever is favorable. If it is needed to wash the pots, if it's needed to clean the toilet, if it's needed to go out and distribute books, if it is needed to, whatever is necessary, I'm prepared to do that. Bhakti Uttama, that is pure devotional service. Not that I am this and therefore this is the only service I'll render. That is not pure devotional service. That's not sincere. Here, Krishna's pleasure is not the consideration. My pleasure is the consideration. I want to do this. So there is a difference between devotional service and sense gratification. Right? Yes.
Do I understand correctly that to please Krishna, it means also to please devotees or the other people?
Yeah, right. Rather, pleasing devotees are more important than pleasing Krishna. Because Krishna is far away. Krishna is not seeing, Krishna is not coming and telling me, do this for me. But Krishna's devotees know what Krishna wants, right? Or what is needed for Krishna, pleasing Krishna. So they come and tell you. Like for example, you may think that I will sing for Krishna and this is how I will please Krishna. And then the temple president comes and tells you, Prabhu, can you please clean up the kitchen? There is nobody there and next offering is getting late. And you say, no, I am pleasing Krishna, right, by my music. That's more important. Now tell me, which is more important? So, you know, serving the devotees is more important than directly serving Krishna. And when Krishna sees that devotees are pleased with your service, then he'll be pleased. That is how Krishna becomes pleased. Direct approach to Krishna doesn't please Krishna. The indirect approach through the devotees is what pleases Krishna. Yes, Sadhvi?
Try to do it the best I can. And then when I feel I'm going to drown, I'm going to drown if I can, so I'm trying to save that person and keep swimming, I can't do it. So then Krishna lets me go and keep on doing devotional service, but let me do other things so that I can not drown. But he keeps putting that in front of me and until it seems that I pass it. He does it so many times that I always go and then he brings me, okay, you still have to do that. But then,
You're talking about preaching to people.
I'm talking about my tongue.
Oh, I see.
You know, it's like he wants Krishna, but he doesn't. But Krishna keeps putting the situation like this. Krishna is always telling him, you know, you have to come back and work with him and like that. And I do to some extent until one time I crashed the car because I just couldn't take it anymore. Then at that time, at that time, everybody knew that I needed a break. But the thing is that, but Krishna keeps putting it in front of me, and I'm afraid of it. Because I feel like I'm drowned sometimes. And although he is making projects,
well, it is, in one hand, it is natural that as a mother, you would feel the welfare of your son. That is one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that who is your son? You had so many sons in your previous lives. Do you remember even one of them? No. The same thing will happen in your next life about your son from this life. Right? Therefore, you have to make a balance between these two. You have to make a balance between these two. Thinking that he is your son and feeling some obligation. And, if he is not taking to Krishna consciousness, then recognize that if he is not going to accept Krishna, then I'm not worried. There are so many living entities who are not taking to Krishna. Here is another living entity who is not taking to Krishna. I'm just giving you a very neutral observation. I mean, neutral suggestion. And if he is taking, but no, then what's the problem?
Level, like some people can follow
three regulated principles and chant Hare Krishna and have affection for the deities, but do also some nonsense, pretty serious nonsense. And then the question where he wants Krishna but he doesn't want Krishna. Do you understand? So ask him to make a choice. Either Krishna or not Krishna. Be firm. Be strict. You tell him that, look, if you don't accept Krishna, I have nothing to do with you. I'm telling you because that's what I do with my disciples. Especially, where I am, giving my input in a strict way, in a serious way. Like, I make it clear to my to the devotees there, that I'm making a garden here. And in the garden, I need only the fruit-bearing and flower-bearing plants. I don't want any weed. So don't become a weed. If you're going to become a weed, then this is not the place for you. And I stick to that in a very strict way. And it passes a very strong message to them. That if they don't become serious about their spiritual life, this is not the place for them. Right? You have one son. I have hundreds of them. And I tell you, this is the way you have to deal with them. No nonsense. Either Krishna or get lost. I know it may sound harsh, but that is the way you have to. Don't look at yourself as a mother. Look at yourself as a teacher. Will you want a student who is not serious about his studies? What you do as a teacher? You may fail him. You let him stay back where others are moving forward. And you are also moving forward. But at the same time, it has to be done with genuine compassion. And the real compassion is Krishna consciousness. Yes?
What about, I don't know if I've been understood correctly, but I understood something like everyone should serve in a way that is like more, how to say, more suitable for the nature, for his or her own nature.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
But who decides? Let your authorities decide.
Yeah.
Not that this is what I want to be. like this is my nature. You know, in Krishna consciousness means surrender. Right? It begins with surrender. So that means you are not in a position to decide anymore. Let others decide. Even at an advanced stage, when you are on your own, still you don't decide. You let the super soul decide. And you take the guidance of other senior devotees in that. That is the difference between, you know, karma yoga and bhakti yoga. You see, in karma yoga, you do what you like to do and offer the results to Krishna. That is karma yoga. But bhakti is, you don't decide for yourself. Let your authorities decide. Let your spiritual authorities decide what you should do. And you act accordingly. You see the difference? Here, in devotion, there is no personal likes or dislike. No personal, you know, motivation. No personal agenda. Whereas in karma yoga, there is a personal agenda. I want to do this. And I do it. But then at the end I offer the result to Krishna. Whereas in pure devotion, bhakti, there is no personal desire. Whatever devotees want, whatever my spiritual authorities want, I'll do that. Whether it is in accordance to my nature, whether it is in accordance to my liking, it doesn't matter. Yes, please go ahead.
I appreciate very much your answer about yourself as a teacher. There are different kinds of teachers. In a way, for me, it's a whole lot easier to travel and preach and, you know, work with just concentrate on my devotional service. At the same time, there are some teachers that are specializing in special needs children. And those who take care of special needs children teach valuable lessons to the teacher, actually. In a way, my son taught me a lot of valuable lessons. But at the same time, there is this danger of when it's too much.
Fine, yeah. Then what does the teacher do in that situation? He or she sees whether the student is benefiting or advancing. Whether this treatment is working. Now, if it doesn't work, then what does the teacher do? Right.
Couldn't give a chance.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just giving, you know, it is, we have to give our, you know, guidance in a neutral Krishna conscious way. You see, I tell you, you know, when it comes to guiding people in Krishna consciousness, you know, we have to keep our emotions aside. You know, it is, you know, Krishna or not. Ultimately, that's it. It's either Krishna or Maya. There is no middle way. The middle way is a state of unconsciousness. Sleep. When you're sleeping, even the dreaming state is also either Krishna or Maya. Right? So actually we have only two ways left to us. Krishna or Maya. And we have to make our choice. There is no middle way. Yes.
He said bhakti is listening from the authority. I thought bhakti is between yourself and Krishna. And how is
But in between there is authority.
In between there is authority.
Yeah. Say for example, no, say for example, first thing is, it's not just you and Krishna. Between you and Krishna is the Guru. Between you and Krishna is the Guru. Right?
Authority here means the Guru.
Not always. Authority can mean, like when you're functioning in as an institution, the authority can be the temple authority, because we are functioning through the structure. It can be our departmental heads. It can be, you know, the devotee who is preaching to me. Then we go to the temple president. Then you go to the GBC. Then you go to the GBC body. And that's the ultimate managing authority. Right? See, we are not just dealing with our individual to individual as such. We are just dealing as an institution. And that is what Prabhupada created. And that is, you know, like, that is absolutely essential for this age. Without the institution, it will not work. Say, if I am alone, no association of devotees, for how long I will be able to maintain my Krishna consciousness? Maya is so strong. But when I am in the institution of devotees, association of devotees, I am safe. Right? Even a weak devotee in the institution can carry on rendering devotional service without deviation for years. Whereas a very strong devotee, he drifts away from the association of devotees. In course of time, he falls down. Now tell me, which one is more essential for our spiritual life? An institution means not only just one authority, many authorities who are actually representing the institution. And now another point I'll make here. In the material platform, authority is a very frightening expression. But on the spiritual platform, authority means a wonderful shelter. So more you have, more the merrier. More you have, merrier it is. Materially to mean to have an authority means he is bossing you, enslaving you, making you work without paying. Right? That is the material concept of authority. But spiritual concept of authority is something like your father. Your father is your authority, but is he a frightening authority? No, he is a loving authority. And then you see in the family, not only your father is your authority, your uncles are your authority, your aunts are your authority, your elder brothers are your authority. And then what you get from them? You get lollipops, gulab jamuns, candies. So more you have, more uncles you have, more more gulab jamuns you have. Right? More, right. And that is why it's very important that in ISKCON we create that environment. The environment of love, environment of protection, environment of affection, environments of gifts, environments of shelter. So as, you know, leaders of ISKCON, that is what we have to, you know, work for. Anyway, Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol. Today we had quite a long question answer session.